Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's time!
Shot broken up in front, and what a slick backhand try right in front of Chris Mason. And now the quick pass down the middle, breaking in, and the backhand stopped by Chris Mason. And Marlowe with a 2-on-1, a 3-on-1, and what a stop by Mason. Chichu right in front, and what a stop on Ekblom by Mason.
And goal number 3, Chris Mason.
We are this segment brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you on this Windy Wednesday. Windy Wednesday is what we're calling it. C-Mace in the house. Chris, walk us through what was going through the mind of Anton Forsberg last night on that crazy play on McCarron's shorthanded goal. And two, what do you make of that rule still intact in 2022?
Well, he's probably thinking, are you kidding me? That was the worst. He's sitting there waiting. I've kind of felt bad for, obviously, you know, I was happy that the McCarron came down and he made an alert play and all that. So good on him, but it's such a stupid rule in my opinion. Like, he's sitting there waiting. The puck is 2 inches away from the line and he can't touch it. So he gets royally screwed on that. I think, you know, McCarron did a good job and it's the rules, but, it's too bad. It really is. I get why they maybe did it back in the day when there is, you know, a few guys who could play the puck and you could hold forecheckers up in the neutral zone and the goaltender would have a lot of time and you could just get the breakout started. But it's different now. You can't hold anyone up. Even defensemen go back for the puck. They don't have much time anymore. So I feel that's an area it's kind of an obsolete rule in today's game. I think you'd get a lot of turnovers, and as much as they did it to eliminate or to create offense and offensive zone pressure, I don't think it would have the same effect as it did back in the day. So that's one I think they need to revisit personally.
I asked Skillsy last night about their slow starts, especially in the first period, and he brought up an interesting point about, hey, you know, this is game 67. An 82-game season. There's only 15 games to go. It's not like these teams don't study up their opponent. They study, you know, players' trends, goalies' trends, and just the system that they're playing, what they're bringing to the table. You don't think they know what the Predators are trying to do. So especially early on in the game, they're trying to prevent that. So meanwhile, on the other side, in the Predators' locker room, they're discussing their slow starts and how do they fix that. So with all that being said, how do you change that? Because you're not going to change your approach. You're not going to change your system, what you do night in and night out. But obviously you want to get off to better starts.
Well, on the flip side of that, they're studying the other team. So essentially it should cancel each other out. And then whoever kind of is able to execute it better or get to their game quicker. And I really honestly think for me, when I've seen the slow starts, a lot of it's decision-making. It's, you know, early execution. And, you know, you got to give Ottawa credit. I talked to Hines in the morning, and he said, he told Willie and I, he said, you know what, Ottawa is a tough team. They're playing hard. They're good defensive. DJ Smith has these guys playing well. They play a 1-1-3 in the neutral zone. So, you've got to move it back maybe to the first defenseman's going to carry it. That forward will come over and try to take him so you can relieve it with back pressure. You bump it back to D-man number 2, and then you need support coming in through the neutral zone. Or if you get it into the neutral zone, you have to chip it in because you're not going to be able to carry it in with the line stacked and the back pressure. So I didn't see them do that early in the game. So to me, that's an execution and a tactic failure, I think, on the part of the Predators where they didn't do that. They tried to stretch it out. They tried to carry it in a little bit. And when you do that to a team that plays back like that in the neutral zone, they get the puck, they're all facing forward, they can see that puck coming, they pick it off, and then they go back the other way. So to me, it's the execution of the game plan is been the problem right now. And I find a lot of times, and we've said this too, and this is my observation, is when a team starts getting some offensive success, they start thinking more offensive. And a lot of the Predators' offensive success in prior games and stretches has come from solid defense and solid positioning. And being back, you know, kind of in the same, you know, situation that I just explained about Ottawa, is you're back waiting. So when they come into your structure, you get the puck, then you go back on the attack. And I feel that maybe the Preds are maybe cheating a little bit early in games, or thinking that the offense is going to come easy because they're hot and they're scoring goals. And you tend to get away from that when you change your mindset to a strictly offensive standpoint instead of, you know, recognizing kind of what got you there. Your defense and your structure was the big reason that you got a lot of that offensive pressure. So to me, it's got to be back to basics, and it starts with the defensive side of things and the understanding that if you play solid in that department, you will get offense.
I thought McCarron's late period goals were backbreakers in that game last night. I want to ask you about the one in the second period, his second goal on the night. I think he went forehand, back in, and that looked like, I think he lost the puck or whatever, but it just happened to slide five hole and in. As a goalie, there's so much going right there in front. I mean, you know, one, McCarron's a big dude. He's right in front. There's a lot of action right in front, and you're trying to, you know, I can't only imagine what goes through a goalie's mind, but you've probably been through that play many, many times. What's that like?
Well, it's like when a guy, you know, kind of whiffs his shot. You're reading the information in front of you. You're reading, you know, his body language, his stick positioning, where he wants to go. And to me, it looked like McCarron wanted to pull that to the backhand and tuck it in behind him. So you saw Forsberg, Anton Forsberg, I guess I should clarify. He opened up because he was going to try to take away that, you know, part of the ice. And then essentially, it was really an unreadable play because, you know, he had no idea that the puck was going there. And I don't think that was McCarron's intention anyway. Maybe until I hear different, that's what I believe. So it's tough because you can't really read that. And by the time you are able to react, it's in the back of the net. So, but I agree with you, though. I think there are backbreakers. And I think anytime you play a young team like that and they've got hope and they've got will, they're going to keep fighting and they're going to keep going and they've got that belief. But as soon as you kind of introduce a little doubt, I think they've, you know, a team that's used to maybe losing those types of games, I think that's when you can really push and take the, you know, get the advantage back and get that momentum. And I think the Predators did that in the third period. Juice, obviously, I think he allowed them to get to that point because, quite honestly, that game could have been over in the first period if it wasn't for Saros. But they did eventually get it going. And Scalzi said on our post game too, he said, you know, sometimes good teams just find a way to win. And sometimes it's your goalie and you get those big goals at the right times, the McCarron goals, and then in the third period. And I thought the third period was good, and Ottawa kept coming, but I felt the Predators were more in control of their game.
Chris Mason is with us. We're talking Predators hockey. Mace, I want you to break down the 2-on-0 save. This is tough on the radio that UC Saros made because it was maybe the one, and there were probably six or seven, and that's way too many. But the just golden chances that Ottawa had that he shut down, of course. The obvious one is the penalty shot that he beats. But maybe the most impressive to me was the 2-on-0 after the steal inside the blue line. It comes out of nowhere. It's unexpected. It shouldn't have happened. Jeremy Lazan, I'm sure, is thinking to himself, "What? How could that happen to me? This is to my new team. He kind of left him hanging there, but Saros bailed him out. But the thing that I want you to break down is how hard it is for a goalie to change directions. It almost looked like to me like it would be a basketball player or a baseball player on a regular surface, but you have to remember he's on ice. The way he's able to dig that edge in and change directions is incredible.
Well, first of all, I always try to put myself in that position of how, you know, I would have done that or what I would have ended up doing. And I obviously I don't have the skill set that Saros does. But first and foremost, you have to completely engage with what Brady Tkachuk's doing. So he's on a breakaway. He's coming with speed off that turnover. It's a broken play. You have to try to get some backward momentum so you can push from your left to right, which is the initial move that Tkachuk did, where, you know, he was, it looked like, you know, he sold that he was going to try to score that goal, score on that play, and then he passes back. So Saros shuts Tkachuk down, and whether Tkachuk was going to do that or had that in his mind all the whole time, he sold the fact that he was going to, you know, make a good move on a breakaway. And Saros went with him. He was fully extended, so in a split, so there's not a lot of way to really change your momentum. And he's such a good skater in the way that they, you know, they kind of have looser a toe strap now with the lace where their skate's able to engage with the ice. But the amount of power that he got in the full split, when he digs his right skate into the ice and then pushes back on Batherson and he gets his glove out and just smothers that puck. It's phenomenal. And the speed and how he instantaneously does it. If there's a split second of hesitation or he takes a second and he has to pull his left leg in to be able to get his momentum up on his weight on his right foot to push back toward Batherson with his glove, it's in the back of the net. It was a great move on that 2-on-0. It should have been a goal. And, you know, UC Saros, I could just tell he was on. It's just his head was connected. And, you know, part of that to anticipating is knowing in the back of his head, he's like, well, I got to stop Tkachuk. But there is a possibility that he may go back to Batherson at the 2-on-0. So, you know, he probably had that in his mind as well. But even if you do that, you still have to execute that, you know, that play, which Saros did. And it was incredible. It is a save of the game. That should be on every highlight reel. But the thing about it is he makes it look easy. So it's not as good as, let's say, if, you know,
a flail
was in. Yeah. It's flailing out. And it's like, it, you know, so he did it so quickly. It made it look easy, which it wasn't.
That was something. So big picture with him, you kind of, we're really observing him in the morning skate to try to figure out things. And there's so many people that were saying, hey, is he getting tired? Is he getting overworked a little bit here? This is crunch time. So what do you take out of last night? Because that was vintage UC Saros here. But at the same time, there's 15 games in the month of April, and they know they've got to get some mileage out of David Rittich.
Yeah, that's it for sure. What I take of that is that, you know, Saros is what he's kind of been all along. He responds after, you know, tough games and tough situations. And you do wonder about the mental and physical fatigue. I mean, any human being, and especially an athlete that's exerting themselves, traveling as much as they are right now, you're going to get worn down to a certain extent, and you're never 100%. But you don't want to, you know, there's certain levels you don't want to, you drop below, you know, when you're driving your car, you don't want to get to the point where, you know, you hear the engine light come on or the gas light come on. You want to keep that tank as full as you possibly can. And, you know, it's going to happen. I mean, the best players in the world, I don't care who you pick, you know, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, these guys all go through dry spells as well at certain points when they don't have their A game or, you know, pucks aren't going in the net. And the same thing for a goalie. It's, you know, it happens. You're going to get scored on. And the way, the combination of maybe him being not at his best, and what I mean by that, because he's not giving up bad goals, but maybe just not making the saves that he was last night, and all of a sudden the game, you know, they could have had five or six goals last night, like they did in Vegas and like they did in L.A. Well, that was Rittich, but like they did in Vegas. But it shows me that he's able to recover quickly, and that's like the elite guys can do that. You know, guys that are maybe in the next tier or two down, one or two games that aren't your best turn into four or five, and then all of a sudden you have a, you know, goaltending controversy and you have two guys and you don't know who to put in the net. But having said that, to your other point, is they got to play Rittich. There's a lot of games, and the big picture here is playoffs. You got to get there and you got to get position, but you also have to look at this team. No matter what anybody says about how the Predators are going to do, or oh, they just got to get to the playoffs and have a good competitive first round, they want to go and they want to win that first round no matter who they're playing. And if they're going to do that, they're going to need Saros at 100% or as close to as you possibly can. And that means using David Rittich. So it'll be interesting here. They got a few games this next couple weeks here. They could do some different things. They'll be very interested to see exactly how they deploy the goalies. Because we've seen, Willie, as you and I have documented, aside from that Vegas game, after a game off, he's 9-1 now?
9-1. That was his first loss, was the Vegas game. After a rest.
So, yeah, So the rest is going to be it's a thing, and they're on top of that though. I've had some discussions, and you and I asked John Hines about that, and they know they're going to have to give him some rest at some point, and it's part of the plan. But it's always moving. You know, it depends on the game and the situation. So this next couple of weeks will be interesting to see what they do in that regard.
For the appearance on today's show, I have purchased you a ticket to the Buffalo tour tomorrow.
Oh,
it's either tomorrow or Friday. It's put on by Pete and Claudia Weber. So I've purchased you a ticket. You're taken care of. You're on the list. I've got Willie a ticket. So there will be a Buffalo tour on this trip. So thanks for doing this.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I feel like I've heard so much about Buffalo and the Bisons that in my mind I've already toured. I've toured it all.
You may meet Buster. I can't promise that. I'm just throwing that out there. You may meet Buster. I don't know. I can't make any promises.
We'll have to check his schedule.
But I've got your guys' tickets taken care of. Thanks for doing this,
as
always.
Thank you. Fine, sir.
Chris Mason will join Willie in the booth on Friday's coverage on Bally Sports. And, of course, Mace every Wednesday brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. I want to talk to you about Wager. You've heard me talking about them for weeks, and it is time for you to jump on this new social sports betting app. It lets you bet on sports with your friends, your coworkers, and other folks here in the state of Tennessee. And even me, as you guys did yesterday and just took my money. Rather than betting against the book that's incentivized to see you lose, you can get on there and have a whole lot of fun like we've been doing. Of course, I like to have a lot more fun when I'm winning. Last night, you guys took it to me, and maybe that's what I get for dabbling the NBA. Am I going to get away from the NBA? Probably not. I'll probably be accepting more wagers tonight in the NBA, and I may even throw out a couple as well. So rather than chasing someone down for their money, you don't have to worry about that. When the game is over, the bet is settled right there on the app on the minute the game is over. You don't have to worry about all that on Wager. So if you're not on the app, you're missing out on a whole lot of fun with your community. If you're over 21 years of age, download the Wager in your phone's browser at wager.me/DMAC. That's Wager, wager.me/DMAC, DMAC, and let's have some fun. And remember, when you get in there, join the 102.5 The Game crew, and let's see if you can take some money from me. Hopefully not tonight, but you certainly did it last night. I'll be sending out wagers soon for tonight's games. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older to play. If you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-889-9789. All right, TD has stuck his head in here. He's going to be pumping out another Talking with TD.
Yep, he's putting it together right now as we speak.
Coach, he said at first, when he heard it, his answer was going to be Marvin Lewis. Evidently, him and Marvin Lewis got sideways. But he said, ultimately, his answer is Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly's starting to get a lot of votes.
He's inching up. A new nominee.
So, Teron Davenport, his official vote was Brian Kelly, eking out Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis, a name I was not expecting to hear.
Right.
In the last hour or so, but I'm glad I did. I want more random coach hate. Like, it's easy to hate, like, Brian Kelly. Totally get it. But, like, I want some obscure ones.
Jeff on our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. This is not me, like, inserting my own words. This is his exact text. Coach Meathead.
Coach Meathead.
And then he texted back in and said, Mike McCarthy.
For those who aren't familiar.
Just right. Just because right. I've been calling him Coach Meathead since Hard Knocks. And I think Tim Hasselbeck got a kick out of it because I was like, Tim, he comes off as a meathead. And this year it played out. He came off as a meathead. I don't know. I feel like, and you know, for me to say this, for me to admit this, Willie, this is kind of big stuff here. I'm going to use an old reference, Happy Days. But I do wonder, with them naming the Detroit Lions as the subject for Hard Knocks, if it has finally run its course and jumped the shark. If this Ooh. Is really it. Because I think once you're getting to the Lions, maybe you're like, you may be surrendering. You may be going, you know what? I think it's run its course.
But there have been some teams that were so bad that actually turned around and had good years after being on the Hard Knocks. The Marvin Lewis and the Bengals were one of them.
What do you feel like the Lions could be the subject of Hard Knocks change their fortunes?
Not being on Hard Knocks has not changed their fortunes. So no, what do they have to lose?
That is not. Well, but also it's the Lions. Like, what's something you never hear anyone say? Man, if I just had like more coverage of the Lions, like I'd be good. There was just a little bit more coverage of the Lions.
I mean, the Browns were on there. They were at the absolute rock bottom.
Look, I'm going to watch because you know I'm a homer for the Hard Knocks. But
were the Browns not coming off like an 0? Were they 0-16 right before they? Remember when Hugh Jackson was there? They were bad. They were really bad.
Well, they've had a lot of bad teams.
And that was Baker Mayfield's first pick in the draft. So they picked him. So
I also admitted last year, and it's hard for me to admit this because I am such a homer for the show, that last season was the worst season ever. So I'm starting to now go, okay, has this? Although the Colts in season, maybe that's the new direction. I found fascinating. I loved it. Now, maybe it's because it was in the Titans division and they were, you know, they got hot and then they crumbled. I don't know. Maybe that played into it. But I do wonder, it's like, okay, I got on here and admitted that the Cowboys was the worst one ever. It was boring. Absolutely boring. Did I watch all of them? Yes. But I came away going, wow, I'll never get that time back. Like, that was terrible. There was nothing intriguing about that at all. It was absolutely boring. And I'm going, okay, but is that maybe the new trend? Is Hard Knocks run its course?
I think it's all the people. You can only work with the people that you have.
No, I think there's too much editing.
Okay.
As in the teams or the league. Like, hey, did I make sure you don't? There needs to be more controversy. Let me tell you, were we watching when the Raiders were the subject? John Gruden, Antonio Brown? I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure they didn't love that being aired, but we were watching, right? I know I was. You didn't hear me complaining about the Raiders as the subject on Hard Knocks.
They hit the jackpot for that one.
Antonio Brown had the foot stuff. He had the helmet stuff. I think didn't he just flat out quit on there, or they quit on him? They fired him. I mean, there was all kinds of drama. There was no drama with Dallas at all. It was boring. It was, what was it, sliced bread? So you got Jimbo Fisher fired up.
Bro Bible.
Sliced bread, man. It was boring. So I do wonder. I'm worried. I'm floating this out there saying I'm worried for Hard Knocks. The Detroit Lions could end Hard Knocks.
Or Man Campbell saves Hard Knocks.
Or, as Elijah just put it, Man Campbell takes his shirt off, rips his shirt off, and saves Hard Knocks. And it becomes one of the most popular ones they've ever done.
I'm going to throw a wall for that guy.
Either way, you're going to be watching to find out. I may
going to be
not.
Watching, but for how long? Like, is this it? I do wonder. All right, let's come back and get back into the Predators because there's some intriguing storylines. We had some good conversations earlier in the show. And the whole UC Soros workload, didn't look like it was affecting him last night, but will it affect him? But first, Willie, you're going to tell everybody about Lee Company.
All right, let's talk Lee Company. 615-567-1000. That is the phone number. Remember the home maintenance plan. It's a great time to do that because you may have not had your air conditioning unit checked in the last year. So jump on board with the home maintenance plan. It's very simple. Year round, you get checkups from Lee Company on your air conditioning, your heating, your plumbing, and your electric. They do it in a timely fashion. They'll call you and set up an important time, a convenient time for you to have them come out and look at these things. And what they do is they find the little problems before they become big problems. And in exchange for that small monthly fee that you pay to be a member of the home maintenance plan, you get discounts on any repairs that you have going forward. I live in a house that was built in 1913. Over time, things break down. You know that if you're a homeowner. So you're going to save money on the long haul by being a part of the home maintenance plan. It's Lee Company, proud sponsor, Nashville Predators. We'll be talking about them on the other side. They are a huge sponsor of our radio coverage, which resumes in Buffalo on Friday. It's LeeCompany.com. The phone number, once again, 615-567-1000.
Here at 102.5 The Game, we're Nashville's official home for NASCAR. Vroom, vroom. Sunday at 1:30 p.m. That's in the afternoon. Toyota Owners 400. They have the weirdest names for these races now. Richmond Raceway. Also, Chase will get you set for the race Sunday morning at 8 o'clock here on these airwaves with Chasing Checkers. See what he did there? Chasing Checkers. Back here on the DDC, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you, Elijah Campbell, Hillside Medical Game Studio. It's 15 games remaining. UC Saros has made 56 starts, I believe. It's off the top
56,
of my head.
Correct.
56?
Okay. Tied for the most in the league. Connor Hellebuck will, I'm guessing, be in goal tonight for Winnipeg, and that will be 57 for him.
Okay. Four more back-to-backs. So let's just throw that in as that's a given. So that would put it at, what is that, 67 starts? So what is the real number? What's the real number? If you threw in, he's sitting out four with back-to-back situations, but I just don't believe that is the only way he's not in there. I just don't.
I think they understand that they have to really monitor this. And let's take, for example, last night, the dilemma that you have. I think in the big picture, you know you've got to get some rest for your franchise player. You heard Chris Mason say it, that you don't want to just get into the playoffs. You want to be able to win in the first round. And to do that, you got to have a great series from UC Saros. There's no two ways around it. UC Saros is the most important guy on the team. And that's on a team with Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene, all the guys having these great years. But you can't go anywhere without great work from Saros. Last night, they don't win that game without UC Saros.
No.
And that's pretty scary. But he picked them up. And there's a stat that Adam Vingan has been following called steals, where you look at the quality that you gave up and how many goals the other team is supposed to score based on that quality. And when your goalie bails you out and wins the game, that's called a steal. He's racking up steals. He's worth a ton of points in the standings, even with some of the recent lulls in his stats. But that being said, I think it is real that when you haven't done it before and you're playing all these games, you have to be concerned about the maintenance of your mental sharpness, your physical sharpness. But, for example, you've got two games before you play Buffalo. So on the first on first glance, you say, hey, two nights off, that's a ton of rest for UC Saros. Get him in there. And that's what I think they're going to do, right? Especially coming off of the way he played last night. So if you play that game, that's what they've done a lot. They've said, you know, we planned on resting UC Saros, but hey, the season's going to be shut down before Christmas. That's extra days rest for UC Saros. Hey, we thought we were going to have 3 weeks off. We only have 1 week off. But, hey, we can play him. I think there's a couple times that they had some built-in rest that they sort of justified playing him even more games than they planned originally because he's been kind of like their MVP. But as we pointed out yesterday on our television broadcast, the numbers are a little bit different since the All-Star break. And there's been some games where I think he's actually played well, but he's just given up three or four goals because of the nature of the way the game was played on that night. Like, I think the game where, for example, you play the Maple Leafs, he gave up three goals, which was it seems like a lot for him, but he played really well in that game. You hold the Maple Leafs to three, that's pretty good. He made 44 saves in Las Vegas in that game last week, but he gave up. They had 50 shots. Some of the stuff that was coming at him, I don't think you can say that was on him. He gave up 50 shots. They were badly outplayed. He stopped 44 shots and still gives up six goals, so sometimes you have to keep that in perspective. But look at the schedule, Darren. You got 2 days off Buffalo, 3 days off Minnesota. That's a home game, Minnesota. He's got to play that game, right?
100%.
So where do you give him a night off? Do you give him a night off in Ottawa, where you just played that team, and you come to the conclusion he won the game for you last night? Can you go up to Ottawa and give him the night off?
Sure.
I think that's the kind of – you don't want to, but I think you kind of have to. It's not a back-to-back, but maybe that's one where you just have to say, look, we've got to do this. I'll give you – you know, in the past when they did it, you're on the flight to Florida and you're saying, okay, how are we going to beat the Florida Panthers? They're 23-2 or whatever they were at the time. 23-3.
Yep. Best home record in the league.
How do we beat
far.
Them? Well, we got to play UC Saros. But they had to stop themselves and say, you know what? We've got to give them a night. Let's give them a night. And David Riddick rose to the occasion, played a good game, and they rallied and got a big win. They're just going to have to do that a couple of times, I think, down the stretch. So what's the number? Pekka Rinne played 73 games in 2011-2012. 73. That led the league. Thomas Fokun had a year where he played 73. Most people now, just in the last 10 years, they've come to the conclusion that
it's too much.
It's too much to play that many. So I think you're looking at trying to keep it to about 65, 66. Don't you think?
Yes.
So there's 15 games left. If he played 10, that would be 66. Now, here's the other thing we talked about earlier this week. They end the season with a back-to-back at Colorado, at Arizona. Like? What's on the line for those games? Is a seed on the line? Is getting in on the line? If getting in's on the line, you're gonna put them in there.
The other factor is Colorado in that game could have zero to play for.
I anticipate that they'll have the number one seed locked up by
which
then.
Which means what? They'll probably sit some guys. Yeah.
But, so I'm not even – you know, that's part of it. But is it – need to win to get in, or is it need to win to get a 3 seed as opposed to wild card 1? Is there a need to win to get wild card 1 as opposed to wild card 2? There's a lot of things that could be on the line.
Remember, Carolina had nothing to play for in the final regular season game here.
Yeah.
And they sat a bunch of guys down, and Pekka pitched the shutout.
Right.
You know, so it just, I don't know what Colorado's approach will be.
Well, Carolina, I can't remember if they had a seed on the line in the second to last game.
Can't,
remember that?
Yeah, I can't remember.
And Nashville beat them. They didn't rest anybody in that game, and Nashville beat them. Yep. And then once they did clinch, both teams rested a lot of guys for the Pekka game.
Yep.
So
shut up.
I think you're conscious of it. Next week is the really big workload. You actually have a little bit of time to breathe here, because between now and next Tuesday against Minnesota, you've actually got 5 days where you don't play. You only have 2 games in 7 days. That's unusual at this time of the year. But then it really picks up. From April 5th until the end of the season, it's extremely busy. And that's where I think you really have to work and figure out what's the right day to spot David Riddick in there where it's not a back-to-back.
John Robinson is evidently in Knoxville today at Tennessee's Pro Day. Also, Jim Irsay apparently lost his mind at the end of the regular season. It's pretty interesting, some of the stuff that has come out yesterday after we got off the air. We'll discuss that as well as you listen to the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's almost the end, Jim. It's the end for Carson Wentz and Indy. We're going to get to that in just a moment. Don't forget Smashville Live tonight during the 6 o'clock hour. You can also watch the show on the game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter. Smashville Live every Wednesday night during the 6 o'clock hour. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. This is the end. We know Carson Wentz is done in Indy. Good luck in Washington. But what's interesting is the owners' meetings. Of course, they came out with the new overtime rule that we discussed, but Jim Irsay, who's never been shy on his words, said at the owners' meetings yesterday, I think the word, this is quote, all these are going to be quote, Colts owner Jim Irsay. I think the worst thing you can do is have a mistake and try to keep living with it going forward. Now, I agree with him. I think at times he's a little bit crazy. Maybe blank, blank crazy. But on that one, I agree with him. Like, it is dumb. Like, it's a mistake. If you know something's a mistake, don't just keep going there and expecting different results. For us, it was something we had to move away from as a franchise. It was very obvious. Now, this is the quote that cracks me up. Willie, anytime you start with no disrespect to.
Yeah.
But here goes.
You know it's coming.
But here goes. Jim Irsay says, and I quote, no disrespect to Jacksonville, but I mean, they're the worst team in the league. You play well and hard for the first quarter or so, and they're looking to go to their locker room and clean it out. I've never seen anything like that in my life. You say, my God, there's something wrong here. It needs to be corrected. I think that we feel like we did. Your guy's going to pick up and carry you through Jacksonville, Irsay said. He has to do it. Not an option. He has to. No excuses. No explanations. But he did. They lost.
I think this is a really fascinating thing that he has come clean and basically admitted to the whole world that he just decided on that day, I'm making a change.
That's it. Which is why Chris Ballard, remember, Chris Ballard spoke right after their season ended, and he was just like, when asked about Carson Wentz, yeah, I'm not sure we're going to be moving forward. Clearly, he had already been in the owner, you know, he'd already been with Jim Irsay, and Irsay's like, get him out of here. It's over. So Chris Ballard already knew right then. He already knew. That's why he was like that in that press conference. I was like, man, he didn't sugarcoat. He didn't mince. He didn't like paint like a fuzzy picture. He was like just painting the picture like it's over
with Carson Wentz. And he had to be careful how he said it because he didn't want to ruin his whole leverage.
Yeah.
Like he was able to trade Carson Wentz, which in retrospect, you know, maybe Washington should have driven a harder bargain.
You think?
Maybe.
Maybe waited till he was released.
Which is what Baker Mayfield is going to become. And a lot of people would take Baker Mayfield over Carson Wentz, wouldn't they? It's debatable. Yes,
I would think so.
And one team is going to get some value back, and the other team is going to get nothing. So anyway, I think it's tricky, though, when an owner decides to get emotionally involved and just make a decision. It's probably not, it's not the first time Jim Irsay's done that. Jim Irsay knows something about football, but he's not the GM. He's not the football evaluator. He's not even by title. Like Jerry Jones at least tries to act like or just please the part. Like he has the title, right? He's
He's been the GM for two
decades. He is the GM, so. Yeah. So we'll see how this works. This is a mini version, I think a more extreme version, of the Titans and Tannehill. Right? There's that emotional, how did we lose this game? The blame goes to the quarterback. So, if you get irrational about it, which a lot of people were ready to do around here, then you're not thinking about the long-term reach and the practicality of switching quarterbacks. And Jim Irsay, I don't know if he was thinking of it at the time, but he's made up his mind. And he didn't care about the long-term ramifications.
It worked out. Isn't Matt Ryan a better option than Carson Wentz?
That's what we're going to find out.
I think he is an upgrade. Definitely.
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 I don't know about that.
You know how I feel. When we made our predictions before the season, I picked the Colts out, not in the playoffs. I was not buying Carson Wentz stock. I didn't say I'm not picking the Colts this year to be in the playoffs with Matt Ryan. I haven't made up my decision. I haven't made up my mind. It's not like I've come to a hardcore decision. But I'm saying last year, you know, the whole Wentz mania, when he would get to Indy, I was like, I'm out. I'll need to see it to believe it. I don't believe all the hype. I'm not picking the Colts to go to the playoffs.
Okay. That may be true.
So I think they're it's an upgrade.
It may be. And I think they actually did a pretty good job under the circumstances to get Matt Ryan because they could have been lost in the musical chairs thing
or
with something worse.
Right.
But they got him, and they didn't have to give up too much to get him. But all that being said, it's revealed now that Jim Irsay made the deal. Did everybody in the locker room feel the same way about Carson Wentz? Hey, we got to get out of here.
Did Frank Reich,
who really went to bat to get Carson Wentz, was he that committed to saying, hey, I got to get a new guy? Well, I can't make it work with this guy.
It's funny that you bring that up, because Jim Irsay was not done.
Okay.
He says, in having conversations with trusted veterans on the team, so to speak, when you speak to them in confidence, oftentimes they share real. I'm just reading word for word.
Okay.
Oftentimes they share really what's happening. What I found out was very concerning. So there's your answer.
Maybe.
He's painting the picture.
Is he not, though, looking for that? Like, he went to those conversations looking to hear that. Am I right? Like, he made up his mind that day in Jacksonville.
I don't think it, to your point, I don't think it would have mattered.
Like, I go to you, I'm the owner. I go to you and say, Darren, Carson Wentz, man, what do you think? Carson Wentz was awful. We need to get him out of here. Don't you think so? Boss, yeah, I think you're, you know, like, those conversations, I don't know if they're honest and objective. I think going into it, there's a little bit of bias, and he's looking to get.
Well, I think what you're saying is
verification.
That conversation can be manipulated.
Yes, absolutely.
Can be kind of molded to his storyline.
Yes,
his narrative.
And he may be dead on right. The Colts may come out way better because of this, but they had to jump through some hoops and shift stuff around. And they lost some money, right? They had to pay a price to get this done.
It was like $15 million.
That's a lot.
Not $40 million like the Falcons.
Yeah, yeah.
It's their dead money.
What does it say about it? It's like when Julio Jones comes to town. The Falcons look like a bunch of idiots. Why would you want to get, you know, the Falcons were like, okay, here you go. See how it works out. Don't you think there's a little bit of that? Matt Ryan's beloved. Big history. They were willing to pay a lot of money to have him move on, right?
Yes. Well, they were in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. It was very clear they were moving
on from
Matt Ryan.
So if Matt Ryan is for sure better, then why would the Falcons pay the price to move on from Matt Ryan?
Because I think they had already made the situation too awkward by saying, we're in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes.
Maybe.
Then how do you walk that back? Oh, we missed on him. Hey, I'm going after that girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh, it didn't work out. I love you. You know you're my girl. Yeah, good luck with that.
This is what's compelling about the NFL.
Right? It's going to be hard to walk that one back. Apparently, they didn't. They couldn't. All right, it is closing time. That'll do it for our show today. Everybody have a great rest of your Wednesday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.